This program is brought to you by PersonalLifeMedia.com.
So we're back once again at Business Success Tips. We're continuing on the same subject as last week.
Enlightened.
So if you really want to know what's going on, you better listen to last week. So if you didn't pause the show, go back to last week.
And so we are continuing interview with the enlightened being, Stephanie Bailey, as she comes back from 10 days of seeing God, and she was really cute. So, and she had the ultimate orgasm. We're not going to talk about that.
Yeah.
So, without anyone
else. That's what all these questions are.
Without anyone else besides yourself.
Right.
Which is very uncomplicated sex. No relationship involved
you
at all.
You can't enjoy yourself. Between you can't enjoy
yourself and you know, me, yeah. Myself, and I. So, a couple questions.
Yes.
How, now that you're back,
yes,
to the real world,
yes,
that's a very
real is a very general say. How do you apply, or what happens in the real world? How is it different?
Well, it's interesting because I was at first like, oh, this isn't going to be any problem at all to transition back to reality. And that I thought that, you know, because I had such a powerful experience that I would be setting aside 2 hours a day to meditate, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm finding that I have to really make an effort to make sure that the time set aside. And I know I have a different day or a different couple of days if I don't set aside the time. It's really important. But what I'm finding is in my own personal life, and I guess in my professional life, is that I am a more grounded, centered person, and that I'm not as easily rattled, and that I, in general, my percentage of negative thoughts has gone down dramatically, and so. It's interesting because the part of this work, what's so amazing about it is it's just a byproduct of your experience. So these results happen regardless of what you want to have happen.
You're not focusing on the results.
No,
they just
I'm not focusing. Exactly. Because the work is happening in an unconscious mind level. And our unconscious mind is working, what, 1,000 times faster than our conscious mind? And it never stops.
Right or wrong.
And so it's really the driver for all of us.
All behavior. True.
All behavior is the unconscious mind. And once our unconscious mind is habituated to, to reacting negatively or positively to things, it's like telling the gambler to stop gambling. Well, how do I stop gambling?
Right. Well, if you look at in most businesses, I'm going to go back to what the bleep, remember that?
Yes.
And Rantha was talking about certain things. And his pitch was, we're basically controlled by our, you can call it
body fiends.
You can call
them. Oh, no, wait, that's Scientology,
yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, you know, whatever they think.
Our monkeys.
Our monkey
what
fiends.
What do they call that?
Yeah.
Hypothalamus does right. What do they call those? Peptides, which go into your system.
Uh-huh.
And basically, you are run by all these habits.
Right.
And your addictions, what mm-hmm. do you call it? And so mm-hmm. you're sort of this addictive being, whether you're addicted to food, sex, drugs,
money,
power. Being right, being wrong,
anger,
fear. What I fear.
Right.
And you're just like this addictive being reacting constantly to all these addictions. And who you are really never shows up.
Mm-hmm.
It's just all your addictions that show up. So when you're having a conversation, it's about, welcome to my addictions. You know, here's, and you're just demonstrating those. Or in your business and you're trying to close a sale, or you're trying to get a new client, or you're dealing with an employee. It's the addiction machine shows up and says, here are my addictions. Let's talk about employee problems. And they just meant, you know, and that's mm-hmm. what you do. So I think that this kind of a process allows you at least to get away from that for a moment and sort of see how that's how you are.
Right.
All of a sudden.
And see who you are as you unravel the habituation.
Because, okay, so anybody who says, if you say to somebody, are you free? And they live in this country or, you know, most Western countries, they say, oh, yeah, I'm free. But we're not really free if we have addictions. We're basically a prison of different things.
Yeah, we're free with respect to the Constitution and laws, right. but in terms right. of our inner beings,
right.
we're
right. Right. spiritually free,
enslaved,
liberated,
by
liberated.
Well, right. if you look at this, all stress is caused by addictions, right? In a way, mm-hmm. I mean, all stress is a reaction to some outside stimulus.
It's expectation.
Right.
Yeah, reality failing to meet, or perception of reality failing to meet expectations.
So tying this back to business, I mean, in some ways, this increases your EQ, right? It makes you better equipped to emotionally react to different situations in business.
Or not react.
Have a more balanced mind.
Right.
And I also think, too, that... that one of the things that he discussed, or the teacher, because you see these videotapes 1 hour a night.
I thought you couldn't watch anything.
I know. Well, that was the only... We didn't talk or anything, but we did get to make eye contact with the video screen. That
buy
talks
my
about,
DVD once you get home.
No. He didn't sell us anything.
I'm telling you, it's
but
the best
that,
thing ever.
That this kind of... having this kind of mind, which is a balanced, beautified mind... and it allows you to make decisions more quickly, like to execute things more quickly, because you don't get caught up in your fear-based thoughts or your worry-based thoughts. And so having a balanced mind makes you more efficient. And then also, what do we need for rest? I'm sure that somebody who's a real practitioner of Vipassana meditation doesn't sleep as many hours as everyone else.
Right.
Because what do we need for rest? We need to rest our mind. Well, our unconscious mind never turns off. So we have to rest our conscious mind, which is hard to do if you have the monkey mind.
Right.
So most people, when they wake up in the middle of the night, they just start thinking. But if you're focused on your respiration, or you're focused on the sensations on your body, then your mind is actually resting,
right. Well,
which is a big part of sleep.
If you tie this back to the answer which you talked about earlier,
yes.
that all creation, literally all creation, is done in the subconscious mind.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's relationships, money, power, or peace of mind, whatever, it's all basically created in the unconscious mind. And the conscious mind is still a teeny piece overlaid over the top. And most of the book about the answer talks about, if you don't really shift at the unconscious level, you'll keep repeating the same play over.
Yes.
I mean, whether it's financial problems, relationship problems, or whatever your life story is, if you don't shift it at the sort of subconscious or unconscious level,
uh-huh.
you will basically live the same scenario out your whole life in different place.
Right.
So maybe this can start to fill in the grooves in your non-conscious
yeah,
mind.
Exactly. Right? Well, this is you need a tool, because
yeah.
you can say that. But, if we all agree that our unconscious mind is running the show and we don't have any control over it, then you can't will your unconscious mind to change its habits
right.
with maybe a lot of focus. But, then you can do that for, about 20 minutes at a time? And then we forget what we were supposed to focusing on.
He says it takes 30 days of repetition.
To change a habit.
To start to change a habit.
Yes. And so, again, this is an opportunity to do that kind of work without thinking about it.
Yeah.
It's a byproduct of doing the work, or doing the meditation, I should say, is that you can change the habits of your unconscious mind. Because I completely agree with that. And again, I didn't have that perspective. I had read about it and I had talked about it, but I didn't have that perspective until I experienced it inside myself. And that goes back to what the Buddha going under the tree for 45 days and coming out fully enlightened. Believed that the wisdom, the most important wisdom that we all have to gain, is that firsthand experience wisdom. It isn't wisdom from talking to wise people,
no.
or wisdom from reading it in a book,
first
or wisdom
person.
From conversing about it.
You can gain knowledge from seeking outward, but wisdom always comes from within.
Wisdom comes from within.
We already have it all.
We do.
Right.
We know it all. And this is a tool to access all of that.
And that was the whole experience that's described of the Buddha, is that all the answers were found within, that he didn't have to go without.
I think that's the funniest thing about watching, my son, because he's just turning a year, and it's like, he doesn't go around flaunting, oh, look at me, I'm connected to everything. He just is. Everything he does, you can just tell that he's connected to whatever you want to call that, and it's just part of his life. And he's not trying to,
It takes education
show it
to
off
disconnect
or do anything.
We have to work hard.
We have to work hard to get disconnected. What comes up for me, sort of intuitively, is is the analogy of if you're flying a plane, you're trying to control the thing. Mm-hmm. And if you can actually have the balls to let go, mm-hmm. that it flies right. That if you can let go of all this stuff, your body knows what to do, your mind right. knows what to do, and it will sort of straighten itself out, but we just never let go of the wheel long enough to let that happen.
Right.
You were talking about the experience of a child, and I think it's in Peru, isn't it, where they elevate the child? The child's feet can't touch the ground for the first 3 years yeah. because they're closer to God than yeah. to mankind and earth.
Well, you can just tell, yeah. I mean, and just everything they do, every simple thing they do, because they're not concerned. Like, they just react to whatever they want.
They're not trying to
control anything. Yeah. You know, if they bump their head and you distract them, they're onto that. They're not thinking, man, I bumped my head and this really hurts. And son of a bitch, I can't believe I bumped my head.
And I have an emotional charge about the time that my dad was yelling yeah. at me when I bumped my head.
Like,
and I have to store
that. Oh, I
bumped
my head. Oh, look, bright light. That's fun. Yeah. And it's like yeah. instantaneously they're on to the next thing. And
which
should,
is in the present yeah. moment. Yeah. Because yeah. they have no choice.
So for our listeners, yes. what was the demographic, would you say, in terms of, you know, age group, what were people...
Pot-smoking hippies?
Yeah.
I would say it was all over the place. There was 30 of us on the female side, and about a third of us were over the age of 40, mm-hmm. and they came from all walks of life, and the oldest being a 65-year-old doctor, and then there was the, you know, the 30-somethings that... There was professionals, mothers, and then the recent graduates from college. But I was surprised. I thought there would be more younger people, and maybe that would change in the summertime.
There never is.
But but the truth is that this is such hard work mm-hmm. that you really have to want to be there. Like, it can't just be something that you're like, I think I'll go check that out. You know,
right.
And you got to clear your schedule. You need to make the commitment. And so they were really. I was interested to see the wide variety of people. So I think anyone could go into that experience and feel comfortable.
So how would you run a business from the present moment?
How would I run a business from a present moment? I just want to live my life from the present moment.
Well, running a business is part of living your life.
Exactly.
So what would... We have business A and business B. Business A is run from past and future, and business B is run from present moment. What would it look like? How could we help our listeners know whether they're doing that or not?
Well, I think if they are spending a lot of time thinking about the past and thinking about and worrying about the future, then they're not in the present moment, and that they need to be focused on, you know, the tasks at hand in front of them. To know that
mindfulness,
yeah, that mindfulness, right.
But the current, I'm not saying this is right, but mm-hmm. sort of current thinking in business for a long time has been, well, you need a business plan. You need to like figure out what you got to go into the future.
I mean,
figure
if
out
you look
the future.
Business primarily is run out of ego,
and you got to go into the past
Most,
and
yeah,
what happened in the past.
Of business is run out of ego.
And then, in order to make a good decision, you've got to look at all that stuff.
I don't think conventional wisdom says you have to look at the past, but I think it does say. I asked you a question today about, you know, how long do you think it's going to take you to get to 100 customers? Mm-hmm. And you said 5 months. So clearly, at some point, you thought 5 months ahead.
Right.
So how do you reconcile living in the present with having to project your aspirations into the future?
I have an answer for that. I think that they coexist very well. I think that we use in business, we have to examine the past. There's a difference between living in the past and examining the past.
Right.
So we examine the past with our reports and our statistics to see how is my web traffic doing, or how are my sales last quarter, or quarter over quarter, to see trends. I mean, that's valuable data.
Sure.
We've all used that kind of data, or you should, you know, otherwise you can't. You have to have gauges and dials in business, so you're flying blind. We have to look into the future to say what it is, where we want to go, because our goals drive us and our forecasting drives us to a reality. I think that that's part of the creation of reality, or if you don't even want to go that far, just to talk about setting goals and achieving them. And then, but we must always, regardless of our past examination and our future goals or aspirations, we have to be in the moment now so we don't miss things.
Right.
And I don't see that as an either.
Well, there's a term, I don't know what time we call it, high compassion and indifference, which we'll call the Zen of business, which means you have a view of the future and you have a view of the past, but you have no attachment to either. Mm-hmm. which is a different kind of, you know, it doesn't, the attachment's what causes all the problems. Mm-hmm. Because then you're coming from your ego as opposed to your intuition, your being, and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And you make a lot of, in my opinion, the incorrect decisions because of your attachments. Like you won't let an employee go because of your emotional attachment, or you mm-hmm. won't make a sales call because you fear rejection, or, you know, pick one. But it all has to do with, instead of being in the moment, if you have something good to offer somebody, you just show up and say, you need to buy my product because it's good for you. You show up with, oh my God, they'll reject me, and I'm going to feel about me, my product isn't that good, and do this monkey mind thing. So you just kind of look them in the eye and say, you need my product because it's good for you, and just have them get it. It's all this other stuff that gets in the way.
Yeah, we're going to take a break right here on Business Success Tips, and we will be back. We're talking with Stephanie, my wife, about her Vipassana meditation retreat experience. We'll be right back. And we are back on Business Success Tips, talking about Vipassana meditation and the benefits to business of being in the present, here and now moment.
Oh, right.
And I have a question about that, then. Do you think that part of the benefit of being in the present moment is that we're not telling ourselves a story about the past or the future, but that we're in reality?
Well,
and especially in this current economic climate, I think that's an important... But then, what do you think about that?
Well, you know, because I was just listening to, I don't know if you know Jim Driever, but he's a friend of mine from a long time ago. He's written a book called You're Not Your Story.
Mm-hmm.
And it's talking about how, because everybody comes from their story. If you really believe you're this enlightened spiritual being, and you're a spiritual being living in a physical body, it's a different take on life.
Mm-hmm.
And you are experiencing this to learn what you can learn and move on. And so every event is like this sort of enlightening experience, and you're in the present moment. And whether you're selling something or you're dealing with an employee or in any, because business is nothing but relationships, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in a relationship, you're in the present moment or you're not. And when you're not in the present moment, you're not nearly as effective in that relationship. Whether it's, as I said, selling something or talking to employees or managing, it's all relationships. So if you can actually be in the present moment, I believe that the relationships will go better. I mean, you will sell more stuff, you will have less employee problems, you will have less management problems. There's going back into this sort of funny, the Star Wars analogy, when the guy, you know, the thing comes in, he says, let us go by the gate or whatever. Because he's so clear about what he says that people just get it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen...
You don't need to see their paperwork. These aren't the droids you're looking for.
That's right, that's right.
If you're going to make a Star Wars quote, in my presence, you got to get it right.
Oh, okay. Fine. I appreciate
it. I appreciate that.
So when you're in the sort of the zen of the moment and you're selling a product and you look somebody in the eye and say, I really, you know, believe you need this service, whatever it is, and you're very clear about it, and you're in sort of high compassion and indifference, and you're not attached to it,
mm-hmm.
people just say, great,
right.
Let's do it. But when you come from any kind of demand or plead or any kind of ego position, people sense that, and they go, well, I need to think about it, or, well, maybe we'll talk about it next week, or all this stuff.
There's an energetic answer.
Let me give you kind of a counterpoint. Oh, sorry.
No. I was just going to say there's a nonverbal communication happening, an energetic...
Right.
Transmissions occurring.
That's right.
So let me give you the counterpoint on the present moment. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm thinking about this in not a zen enough perspective, but I think that part of what's happened during the economic bubble and subsequent decline is that during the bubble, people lived too much in the moment to the extent that they thought the party was never going to end, mm-hmm. and so all their behaviors reflected this. It's always going to be like this. They overspent. They overconsumed. They overbought. And from a business perspective, it got them into a bad situation. So if you're sort of reconciling business and economics with the present moment, you sort of have to be mindful of the fact that...
Although it's funny because
it's permanent, right?
If you stay true...
Nothing's permanent, right?
If you stay true to the teachings,
yeah.
If you're in the present moment, one of the other teaching is, you know, gluttony or over, you know, spending. That's not in line with your true self either. If you're, you know, living in mansions and having 5 cars and 10, you know, you're out of alignment anyway.
That's actually not living in the present moment, I would counter, though. What you're doing is you're projecting even though it's unspoken and not subconscious, you're projecting the future reality based on the present moment. So what your assumptions, your foundation, is that everything will continue the way it is.
Right.
So you're actually not really being realistic and living in a reality.
So ironically, your present actions aren't necessarily indicative of living in the moment.
And I will get even a little strange on this.
You?
Yes. And say that
he of the space people?
That's right. If some people have never experienced a recession at all. I mean, their life has, they've done what they've done, they've lived their life, they've had their family, they've had their whatever, and they never actually participate. And then they're going through this whole, now.
Well, Gen Y. I mean, Gen Y was living in a bubble.
But I mean, there are people, as we speak today,
who haven't been touched.
Who haven't been touched. Who have their life.
I would argue everyone in this room is still living in a bubble. I mean, really. I mean, if you think about it.
No bubble.
I mean, we all have shelter. We all have food. I mean, we might have to get a smaller house. We might have to get not as fancy cars. But come on, people.
You're saying our needs are being met.
Yeah.
Our basic needs are being more than met.
It's really like, because even me, like, we have trouble paying for groceries, and I'm trying to throw a birthday party for $100 for 60 people. But still, I'm like living in this, like, America land, you know? We're like, that's not really problems. I still have a house. I still have food, you know? It's like, it's not real problems. So,
well, I don't think
we all are living.
Obviously,
life
anyone
is
in this
relative,
room,
right?
Yeah. Anyone in this room has no issue with meeting their basic needs: food, shelter, clothing. It isn't even an issue. The only needs we have a problem meeting are ego needs. Is the car big enough? Is the house big enough? Do we have a flat screen or not? Do we get to take that vacation or not take that vacation? Do we get to buy the right health food at the store? I mean, our issues have nothing to do with existence. Mm-hmm. They have to do with what our mind or ego has created around what we think we need. But it's all fantasy land anyway. I mean, we don't need any of this stuff.
Right.
If you just say, we need to eat, we need to be warm, and we need, you know, relationship, and that's the basic needs, we all are
Maslow's
so,
bottom line.
We are so far
like
beyond that,
yeah.
It's a joke.
I think I'm always going to need a freaking fast car.
Or a badass looking one anyway.
That's right.
I'm with Steve on that. That might be in my Maslow's need pyramid.
Oh my gosh.
Slice. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. I'm just that distorted.
I would feel very, very deprived of my Zen core if I didn't have a
It's true. Right. Even if it's a few years old, it's just got to be badass. Yeah. I'm not going to drive a minivan, man.
But all our needs and wants are all... Did you experience that? Of ego. They're not real needs and wants.
They're not real needs and wants.
We made them all up.
And through this experience, what I learned, because I joke about it being Vipassana prison, but, you know, the gong went off at 4 a.m., and a cold breakfast was served at 6:30 in the morning. At 11 o'clock, we were served a hot, warm vegetarian lunch. And at 5 o'clock, we got tea and fruit. And that was it for the whole entire day.
And you survived.
It was a 17 or 18 hour day. The bed was kind of scratchy and uncomfortable. My schedule was not my own. I was stripped of all of my...
Tell me about
that. Was probably the best food
of my my physical comforts, you know. And I found peace and happiness in that environment. And then that's when you realize that, all of it is folly. All of the things we think we need for
it's
happiness
fantasy
land.
Is fantasy.
Funny, we're all
Disney. And so that's living in the present moment, back to what you said, Steve. And like, I agree with Sean that the people who got caught up in the bubble, because you really had to tell yourself a story that you bought into if you thought that the good times were never going to end. Because history has proven, and the law of the universe is, that nothing is permanent.
Right.
So if you lived your life large during that time, like it was never going to end, but you were in the present moment, you actually weren't. Because you bought into the fantasy that the future was going to be bright forever.
So the savers were really the ones living in the present moment, aren't
they? The savers are the ones that don't, or maybe the present moment people are the ones that don't change their behavior, regardless
but
of the circumstance.
Saving is as much of an ego thing as spending. It's the same principle.
I would argue that.
I would argue that as well.
I mean, it's the same thing. It doesn't matter.
Point. I mean,
because you're trying to protect your future ego? Is that what you mean?
Or I'm not saving is not, you save out of fear. Because you're afraid there won't be more later.
You can say that at prepper. I mean,
but it's still
is preparing for the future fear based?
Well,
only?
If you save or if you spend, it's
it
all attachment.
And,
I mean, if you're if you're in the moment and you believe that God and the universe will provide everything you need in any given moment, you totally have faith in the universe. You say, whatever I do, it will be provided for me. And I've read books about people that go into wherever they go and they just, God somehow provides. And they always provide. They don't die. They don't get stabbed. You know, somehow the universe provides for them because they have total faith it's going to work. We all believe that we have to control shit to make it work. We have to have enough money in the bank. We have to make enough money. We have to have the right friends. We have to have a house. We have to have all that other crap, which is sort of this big fantasy land. I'm not saying it's not fun, but if we can see it as this giant fantasy and not take it seriously and play it like a video game, we're cool. But the minute we
I'm giving away all my money tomorrow.
I know, but then yeah. I think God's going to say, Steve, you're on your own.
yeah, and I believe
that
that is...
I didn't tell you to give away all your money. I mean...
I believe that that is really the path of the mooch. That's the path of the mooch.
I have personally experienced God. I've lost $1 million in the last year, and it really hasn't affected much of anything.
Yeah. So, that you're right, because that is a fantasy.
It's a fantasy. It's a fantasy. You know, I mean, when I look at my life...
But I'm still going to say for my kids' college education.
Okay. Yes, I'm entertaining that fantasy. Yeah.
If you, as long as
you want to come along, because
you will provide then for my
children. I'm living by 529.
But it's, if you play it like a game, it's okay. Yeah. But if you think that it's real,
right,
and then you suffer, then you go, oh my God, well, that, I'm suffering.
That,
and then
that
you die at 65 of a goddamn heart attack,
right,
because of all the stress you created in your life, instead of living to 100 being a happy person.
Yeah.
Right. I think that's pretty expensive.
And I agree that there is that attachment that to the idea that we can be in control of everything. And this economic downturn proved otherwise.
We are in control.
That we have
nothing.
No control over the housing prices and the stock market and what our company is going to do. It's all impermanent. But I still think that that has to be tempered with some reality of what we know it costs to live in this world. And it would be wise, I think, from my own personal experience, to have some planning for the future.
Well, there is peace not of to, mind associated there's, with
yeah.
nest egg.
And not so much that that creates stress in your life, but that you balance it out, because you can't, you know, party like it's 1999 and expect to be provided for. I just think it has to be tempered with some wisdom.
Out of fear, I must control the fact that this episode must end. Out of fear of losing listeners.
Okay, way over.
All
so, right, all right. Thank you, Sean.
Thank you for coming on sharing your story with us. We appreciate it. And you made it a better podcast. Yeah, you beautified our podcast. Just like your mind.
I think we have had enough of the fairer sex in our podcast.
I agree.
She can sub for me, you know, anytime. She's right upstairs. I'll just go watch the kids instead. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next time.
And there it is, another episode of Business Success Tips. Thanks, as always, for joining us. You can check out our website online at businesssuccesstips.org. Send us an email at friends@businesssuccesstips.org. Or if you're a Twitter stalker, find us at twitter.com/BST podcast. Thanks. We'll see you next time.
Find more great shows like this on personallifemedia.com.
LexNet Consulting Group is your one-stop resource for a selection of award-winning CRM, email marketing, and business intelligence solutions. LexNet serves small to mid-sized companies across the Western U.S. from our offices in the San Francisco Bay Area, Southern California, and Seattle. LexNet's tailored business solutions are designed to increase revenue and reduce costs. LexNet will help you develop a consistent sales, marketing, and customer support approach to drive your company's revenues, even during tough economic times. Every business has unique needs, and LexNet will help you meet those needs with customized, integrated solutions that give your business easily accessible and actionable information. To find out more about the powerful and effective business management solutions that LexNet offers, please visit lexnetcg.com, where you'll find helpful resources including articles, white papers, industry news, customer success stories, and informative podcasts like this one. While there, be sure to sign up for our Customer 360 newsletter filled with CRM and email marketing news, tips, and tricks. LexNet, your partner in business success.